Hey, thanks for downloading the podcast. And remember, if you want to listen live, download the iHeartRadio app, download the TuneIn app, and just search for Fantasy Sports Radio Network, and you can listen to this program live. Also, if you want to watch the video of this podcast, check us out on YouTube, on Twitch, or on Periscope, and type in, you guessed it, Fantasy Sports Network. You'll find us there. Enjoy the show, and thanks for listening.
You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Fantasy Sports Today.
It's going down right here.
Hour number three on FST. Thanks for joining us on your Sunday morning. Hit us up on Twitter at FNTSY Radio, at Mike Blewett, at The Kevin Walsh, 844-843-6879. Thanks for listening to us on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app, on TuneIn Radio, on iHeartRadio, and wherever else you're able to find us. So we're bringing in my good friend and award-winning writer at IDP Sharks. His name is Gary Davenport, and he's an NFL analyst at Bleacher Report, senior writer for Fantasy Sharks, IDP writer at RotoWorld, and member of Fantasy Sports Writers Association. He was the Fantasy Sports Writers Association Football Writer of the Year just this past season. So, lot to talk to you about, Gary. First of all, how are you? It's been a while.
Oh, I'm doing well. Long time no talk to you.
Yeah, so you went to the Ohio State Fair yesterday, and I'm almost more interested about that than I am anything else we're going to talk about today. So, as you said, you sort of wanted to settle in at the State Fair before you turn the page over to full-time football until the Pro Bowl, or until the Super Bowl, excuse me. So what was the highlight of the Ohio State Fair? It can be a ride, it can be eats, but I'm really focused on the food.
No, it was the food. For me personally, I mean, my stepdaughter, of course, enjoyed the rides and seeing the animals and everything, but I enjoyed the 47 different items that I ate and the sugar coma that I spent most of last night in.
What was the highlight? What was the one thing you ate that you're like, you got to try this?
Oh, as an Ohio guy, and this is something of a Columbus landmark, there's a German restaurant in Columbus called Schmidt Sausage House, and they have a cream puff that is just, oh, it's so good. And I don't know that it was really necessary to have one, you know, after the funnel cake and after the deep fried Twinkie, but I had one anyway.
So Gary, as an Ohio guy, I do want to ask you about the Ohio State situation. You know, we were talking earlier in the show about Richard Mannello. He thinks that Urban Meyer's days are numbered there. I'm curious if you agree, and if so, maybe who you would think could be the replacement for the Buckeyes.
I lean that direction. It's just the whole situation is just a mess, and it's really unfortunate. And, you know, I don't know what it is with Ohio State head coaches. It never, ever ends well. Short term, you know, all indications are they're going to let Ryan Day would at least run the team this year. And, I mean, after that, it's going to be a who's who of college coaches. And if there is a job that could potentially – lure Bob Stoops out of retirement, much as after Jim Tressel was fired, they lured Urban Meyer out of retirement, I would think that this would be the job. I mean, it's not just this. Everyone points to the fact that Stoops is an Ohio guy. It's also a matter, I mean, we're talking about arguably the biggest job for a head coach in college football, and that job comes with a whole truck full of money. And, you know, when that semi full of cash pulls up into your driveway, that's a very persuasive argument.
Yeah. No doubt about it. So I will continue to monitor that, obviously, and see what happens with the Buckeyes. So let's focus back on the NFL. Obviously, you can find Gary on Twitter at IDP Sharks. His work can be found at Bleacher Report, Fantasy Sharks, and even Roto World. So I'm going to ask you about the Browns because we were just talking about them. We're doing our AFC North previews. I'll ask you an offensive question, and then we can get to defense. But to put the Josh Gordon thing aside for a minute, because that's obviously a big story and we don't know what's going to happen with him. But we were just talking about the running backs, and I'm of the opinion that I feel like people are down on Carlos Hyde a bit too much. But the problem with this running back committee, and I'll put that in quotes, is that Duke Johnson's going to have his role that he has. But the committee part that will be frustrating is that it could be Carlos Hyde for a few games, a bunch of games, and then Nick Chubb for a bunch of games if they think he's not doing well. But it won't be shared carries every week. Does that make sense?
Yes, and I'm inclined to agree with you. I think that Carlos Hyde will probably open the season as a lead back. It's just either one of those guys, when they become that lead back, is going to be on a very short leash. There's not going to be much margin for error. So like you said, have a bad game or two and average a couple 2.5 yards a carry, they're going to yank him and put in the other guy. Of the three, the one I trust the most at this point is probably Duke Johnson, if only because at least we know kind of what his role is. He's going to be the third down guy.
So, Gary, I wanted to ask you what you make of the Josh Gordon situation. The one thing that gave me a little bit of concern was that it was immediately then followed up by the Dez Bryant rumors. They feel like they've somewhat fizzled out. But what is your read on Josh Gordon?
I wish I knew what to think. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't want to say that it's too unfortunate, because obviously there are more important things in football, and the young man needs to. If he's finally getting his life in order, he needs to keep it that way. If that means he needs to step away from football for a little while, or even step away from football for good, then that's what he has to do. But from a fantasy situation, I mean, you saw Josh Gordon was ranked pretty highly a week before training camp happened. A lot of people were, I think a lot of people are still, they just can't get that 2013 season out of their heads. And they look at Josh Gordon and they think, okay, if he's healthy and he's back and he's got his head in the game, that's what he's going to do. We don't know. I mean, that was 5 years ago. So at this point, I mean, even if Josh Gordon reports to camp a week, 10 days from now, I don't, at anywhere close to his present ADP, I'm not willing to invest that. You know, give me Jarvis Landry. At this point, get on the Browns offense, give me Jarvis Landry and maybe Duke Johnson, and that's about it.
Yeah, I'm starting to lean that way, too. Look, I took a swing with Josh Gordon in Scott Fishbowl, but that's a pretty unique league, right? We're trying to beat 899 other people. So I took a huge swing knowing that something like that could happen, and I think it happened a day or two after I had selected him. So it's a huge upside pick with a massive amount of risk, and to Gary's point, there really isn't an answer. No analyst out there can give you an accurate answer. It's just like, I don't know. Just take a chance if you wish. So we'll stay. I wanted to talk a little bit about now IDPs related to this division. And you got, obviously, Myles Garrett is now in year two. You got Jabril Peppers, who hopefully will be playing inside of 25 yards off the ball. Denzel Ward added to this team. So give me some thoughts defensively. Obviously, a lot of young talent. Who do you expect to maybe have a breakout season?
Yeah, if Myles Garrett can stay healthy, I see no reason why he can't put up 12 sacks in his second season. I don't even think that's an unreasonable projection. He looked, when he was healthy last year, he looked really good, great burst off the edge. He's the kind of guy who has all the tools to be a star in the NFL. You know, there's a lot to like about the Cleveland linebackers. If the picture was a little bit clearer so far as who was going to start where, I mean, a few months ago, we knew Joe Schober in the middle, Chris Kirksey on the weak side, Jamie Collins on the strong side, problem solved. Then they signed Michael Kendricks, and that threw a pretty significant monkey wrench into things because, you know, Kendricks isn't a guy that you would think they signed as depth. So if he is going to see significant snaps, where are those snaps going to come from? Now, it's my understanding early in camp that at least in base defensive formations, he was lining up on the weak side, which would be Chris Kirksey's spot, which begs the question, okay, now what are you going to do with Chris Kirksey? Is Kirksey now just a nickel linebacker? Are they just experimenting with Kendricks? Is it going to be like a three-man platoon? As a lot of question marks, and question marks when you're in a fantasy draft most of the time are not a good thing. So we saw both those Cleveland linebackers finish in the top 10 of most fantasy scoring systems last year. But right now, much like Josh Gordon, it's a risk-reward pick. There's a possibility that by the time the 1st of September rolls around, you're going to be hanging on to a guy who's going to be lucky to see 60% of the snaps, and that's not good enough.
Gary, can I ask you quickly just about this defense as a whole? Last year, they actually finished as the 16th defense by DVOA, and that was quite jarring to me. I thought they would have been a lock for even a bottom five defense. So do you think that they maybe caught a little bit too much unnecessary flack last year? They were put in a bad spot by the offense, and they might actually have a chance to be a pretty decent or at least average defense this season?
Oh, yeah, I think they can be a solid defensive team, and I think you kind of hit the nail on the head, at least to an extent, when you said they were put in a bad position by the offense. I mean, they were just continually put in an untenable position by Sean Kizer with turnovers. You can't expect a defense to have success if they're constantly defending the short field. I mean, you look, they've got talent at all three levels, whether it's Garrett, Emmanuel, Ogba on a defensive line. Like I said, there's four linebackers for three spots, so they've got they could absorb a fairly significant injury at linebacker and still be okay. If Denzel Ward can play as advertised, he should be really good. They made a couple of sneaky good signings at cornerback in the offseason in E.J. Gaines, who can play really well when he's healthy, and T.J. Carey, who was sneaky good last year for the Oakland Raiders. And then at safety, I want to hope that Jabril Peppers is going to be – well, he has to be better than last year because I don't know that it's possible to be worse. Whether he will be significantly better remains to be seen. But, yeah, I look at that defense. I'm not going to call them a top 10 defense, but I don't think calling them a top 15 defense is that big a stretch.
Yeah, I mean, and to your point about the turnovers, they were minus 28 in turnovers last year. The defense didn't do a particularly good job of turning it over, but the offense turned it over 41 times. Like, you just, there's only so much you can do. Teams are going to run on you and give you less opportunity to pick off passes. So flip the page over to the Steelers. Clearly, it was a significant loss last year, as significant a loss as anybody had, a team-changing loss when they lost Ryan Shazier towards the end of the season last year. Clearly, he's not back, and they have guys like Vince Williams and John Bostic trying to do work for him, which they aren't so much replacements as they are just guys standing where he used to stand. So, but T.J. Watt, coming off a really good rookie season, can maybe create some pressure on the outside and be a presence at right outside linebacker. So give me your thoughts really on this defense being able to remake themselves with Shazier being out of the picture.
Yeah, Vince Williams is going to be a pretty steady inside linebacker for him. Obviously, he doesn't have Shazier's range. And then the spot next to him is still up for grabs between Bostic and Tyler Matakevich. I kind of wonder if at that other inside linebacker spot, if we might not see some of the youngster Terrell Edmonds at least in the nickel, in sub packages. You know, we're seeing some teams run a safety out there at a nickel linebacker spot. And given that the Steelers have two proven veteran safeties in Sean Davis and Morgan Burnett, it would give the Steelers an opportunity to get Edmonds on the field some without, you know, maybe putting too much on his plate as a rookie. And if they can do that, that will cure probably the biggest problem that the Steelers have in the middle of their defense right now, which is that neither Vince Williams nor John Bostic nor Tyler Matakevich, none of those guys have close to the coverage ability that Shazier does. And as it stands right now, if you've got two of those linebackers out there in sub packages, you're going to have problems covering backs and tight ends. So they might be able to mitigate that a little bit with Edmonds. But like you said, I mean, Shazier's not the kind of guy you can just replace. And while I would very much like to see him on an NFL field again, because he's a great player and he went to Ohio State, I can't get past that. I think Ryan Shazier's playing days are probably over.
So let me turn to this Ravens defense that finished top five last year. They were top six the year before that, and they're going to really probably have to try to carry this team if Flacco does remain about quarterback. So who are the standouts for you with the Ravens? I know C.J. Mosley certainly comes to mind for me.
Mosley's an animal. Terrell Suggs is still very capable, despite the fact that his birthday cake has quite a few candles on it. A couple of capable veteran safeties in Tony Jefferson and Eric Weddle. It's a defense where the whole is greater than the sum of its parts. They do an excellent job of scheming and putting their players in a position to succeed. And I would probably say it's the best defense in the division. I don't know that that's really a stretch. Like you said, they're going to need that defense to carry the team. I don't know that we're going to see Joe Flacco turn back the clock 5 or 6 years because he's hearing footsteps a little bit. And if at some point during the season we see Lamar Jackson, they're just going to need the defense to step up that much more.
They are old, man. They are old. That's an old defense. They're good, though. Very good, but it's old. And I just get worried about teams that have so many older players, some one of whom Suggs has had significant injuries. I get worried about that kind of stuff, especially considering how much the injury bug has bitten this organization for the last few years. You know what I mean, Gary?
Yeah, absolutely. But the thing is, in recent years, they've been able to kind of, even when the injuries have hit the defense a little bit, they just kind of seem to keep going. You know, the defense doesn't fall off a cliff if they lose Mosley for a month or Suggs is out for 6 weeks. So, like I said, it's a testament to the coaching staff that they're able to just keep moving. You know, the pieces change a little bit. You have an injury here or there, and yet the Ravens have consistently been a top 10 defense for years and years. So I don't know that I expect them to fall off a cliff this year, but Baltimore is a franchise, whether they want to admit it or not. The rebuild is coming. I mean, it might already be here, and they're just not quite ready to do it yet. This is not the team that won the Super Bowl 5 or 6 years back. They haven't made the playoffs in 3 years. Ozzie Newsome's out the door after this season. And you wonder how much longer John Harbaugh is going to be in town. It's a team that's going to be turning the page soon.
Okay, super quick. One guy on the Cincinnati defense you absolutely have to draft at his current ADP for an IDP leagues.
Oh, Preston Brown, new middle linebacker. All he ever did in Buffalo was put up numbers. Might not be a great NFL talent, but the stats are there. And with Vontaze Burfict out the first 4 weeks of the year, and as generous as those Cincinnati scorekeepers are, oh yeah, he's gonna rack up tackles.
Good stuff. That's Gary Davenport. Find him on Twitter at IDP Sharks. Find his work on Bleacher Report, Roto World, and Fantasy Sharks. Thanks, Gary. We'll talk to you again soon. We'll be back to talk Bengals right after this.
Did you know that you can listen to this show live on the award-winning Fantasy Sports Radio Network? Listen on the iHeartRadio app, the TuneIn Radio app, or download the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. The Fantasy Sports Radio Network is the only totally free 24/7, 365 Fantasy Sports Network of its kind without a subscription. Check out YouTube Live on the Fantasy Sports Network YouTube page and participate in the programming there, where you can ask questions, discuss the topics with other fantasy enthusiasts, or tell everyone that you disagree. Call into your favorite show and ask your question. The number is 844-84-FNTSY. That's 844-843-6879. The Fantasy Sports Radio Network, your free fantasy source 24 hours a day.
Salt and pepper. You don't hear that too often on the radio. Sean Engel producing. Mike and Kevin here. We got a couple segments to go. And before we get back to the AFC North, let me tell you if you enjoy playing daily fantasy sports but are sick of dealing with professionals using algorithms to select hundreds of lineups and entries, try the Props Builder tool at mybookie.ag. Forget having to create multiple lineups, ditch the hassle of dealing with late scratches, and avoid experts winning 90% of the money. Invest in the players that you want without salary caps. And if you sign up for a new account using the promo code FNTSY, you can elect an option to receive a 50% deposit bonus with a rollover requirement. No more dealing with late lineup scratches, no experts to compete against, just you and the prop that you choose. Go to mybookie.ag, enter promo code FNTSY upon signup, and choose your matchups using the Props Builder tool. That's mybookie.ag, promo code FNTSY. So coming up for the rest of the day, we got Fantasy Football Frenzy, and I just got breaking news that Kevin Walsh will be hosting Fantasy Football Frenzy along with George Kurtz. Is this correct?
This is confirmed, correct. George and I for 2 hours after this. The lucky listeners, 5 hours of me? Free?
5 hours of K-dubs. That's a long one. You're going to be tired after. Yeah, good stuff.
Thank you.
Clap right there. Got the, and then so it's you from 12 to 2 with George Kurtz, and then from 2 to 4 Fantasy Baseball Hour. That's Laura Michaels, Justin Mason, I think Todd Zola still guests on that. So Good stuff there. I would like to say happy anniversary to my wife.
Oh, happy anniversary to both of you.
7 years strong. So thank you very much. Appreciate it. 7 years strong. Went out to dinner last night. Good time. Good restaurant. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Well done. Thank you very much. It's been a crazy 7 years, but all fun. All good. Two little kids and suburbs and all that good kind of stuff. So, well, I know you want to get to the Bengals, Kev, but let's wrap up. We'll do the Bengals in the final segment and even in this segment. But let's wrap up the Browns thing because we didn't really talk about the wide receivers. We talked about Josh Gordon a lot. I think Gary put it well on that. The two guys he really wants are Duke Johnson and Jarvis Landry at their current ADPs. I think I'm with them, but you're going to have to take some cracks at Chubb and Hyde and, what you could do is you just draft Carlos Hyde, use him up until he gets the job and then jettison him as soon as he loses it. It doesn't mean like there are players in fantasy football that can be useful for like 3 weeks and then you just ditch him. You know what I mean? But the suggestion overall is that he may not be efficient enough and he'll lose his job. So you might be trotting him out there during times where he's about to get benched.
So right? I have
so that's the difficult part.
The running back ADPs from Fantasy Pros PPR scoring in front of me. So if you'd like to write these names down, okay. And if you could rank them, I think it maybe gives the listener a decent idea of what they maybe would do if they're on that spot. 34, Carlos Hyde. 35, Duke Johnson. 36 is Chris Thompson. 37 is Rex Burkhead. 38 is Isaiah Crowell. 39 is Jamal Williams. And 40th is Chubb. I use the 7-player range because all three Browns are in that.
Yeah, do it again. Hyde, Duke, Chris Thompson, Rex, Burkhead. Keep going.
Isaiah Crowell.
I see. Yep.
Jamal Williams and Nick Chubb. So that 7-player range has all three Browns running backs in it. Now, I'll tell you right now, the guy right behind Chubb is 41 is C.J. Anderson. And again, this is currently on Fantasy Pros. C.J. Anderson would be comfortably in front of some of these guys on this list if you'd like to throw his name in it as well. But just because, I completely understand your point of, it's very difficult to fade all of these guys. But this is kind of the range of guys. So how you would handle them, I think, is interesting. So, kind of just off the top of your head, how would you look at this group? How would you go about them?
The guy I think that has the path to the most touches without doing guesswork is Isaiah Crowell.
Yeah.
Of that group. It might be a relatively inefficient offense, and it could see a rookie quarterback for significant portions of the season. So that has to be considered. That's where the risk lies. But without an injury, Burkhead could be a goal line guy that sees 100 touches, maybe a little more.
I'm big on
Hyde and Duke. We know in PPR that's pretty good. I mean, he'd be your problem is that he's the 35th running back off the board, so he's somebody's end of RB3. He's a deep RB3. It's not a strong RB3, but you know what you're going to get out of him in a flex. The Packers thing. I'm scratching my head about the Packers thing all preseason. I don't know what the hell to do. Aaron Jones is suspended. People are forgetting about Ty Montgomery and just assume that Jamal Williams is going to take the job. But we talked to Joe DeLuise a few weeks ago, and he didn't suggest that that was the case. He thought people were just forgetting about Ty Montgomery and that he was going to be a part of this offense. Significant part. So anyway, of that group, Isaiah Crowell has the path to the most touches, and this Hyde-Chubb dynamic is, that's the tough part of it. This isn't going to be a committee where like, oh yeah, Duke's going to touch the ball 7 times, catch 6 passes, and then Chubb is going to get his 7 carries, and then Hyde gets 12. Like, it's not going to work like that. It's going to be Hyde or Chubb, and you just got to figure out which point in the season it happens.
You sure about that?
I think so.
I don't know.
Why, you think they're going to split it up like the Lions will?
Would not surprise me at all. It really wouldn't.
They could.
I mean,
I just don't see it.
I think here's the thing that I think is difficult. I just feel like Hugh Jackson's going to make decisions based on job safety. And I think he might even at the beginning of it kind of just let them battle it out. And if one pulls ahead, then great. I also think, though, that you could make the same argument that he goes with Hyde, and then he can turn to the young guy, and that can extend his window a little bit as well. I'll tell you, too, this group, I like C.J. Anderson. You know, you weren't with us for the South preview last week, but he's going to lead that team in carries probably.
People are very confident in that. I'm not as confident.
Why? Who is it? Because you think it's going to be Cam? Because it's just not going to be McCaffrey.
I'd have to see the breakdown of the carries. It's a good question.
So last year, Cam Newton had 139. Christian McCaffrey had 117. Jonathan Stewart had 198.
So I'm going to it now. Give me a second. Bear with me. Cam had 139. McCaffrey had 117. He had 813 targets, so he's involved in basically 230 plays. That goes up, right? Right?
The thing, though, is that the receiving...
Targets won't be drastically different, but it could be, let's call it 125. I think his carries go up to... Yeah, I guess it's fair. I guess when you start doing that math, you're ultimately going to land on C.J. Anderson seeing the ball a lot. I think it's fair to do that math. But if he sees the ball only 200 times, let's just say 200 to 200 carries. Last year in Denver, he had 245 with 28 catches. Let's just say he touches the ball 200 times. How efficient do you think he'll be?
If he averages 4 yards a carry, is that too high?
It could be, but I'll just give it to him just for sake of this.
That's 800 yards. And Jonathan Stewart had 6 touchdowns last year. I mean, I don't think this isn't a hot take. C.J. Anderson better running back than Jonathan Stewart at this point?
I think so.
So
C.J. Anderson, Carlos Hyde just got really just thrown under the bus. Those two guys.
The thing, though, is where they're different is C.J. has a clear role, and Hyde is just battling for a position.
I think it's fair. I think that's fair. So, yeah, I think you are getting good value out of C.J. Anderson. You've sold me on it.
Woo!
Would you take C.J. over Crowell?
That's where I was hoping you wouldn't ask that. I struggle with that because I do think that Crowell has a chance to – bell cow sounds maybe a little bit lofty, but the guy where CJ's upside is capped a bit by not just McCaffrey, but also Cam. So I think I'd probably still lean
that their offensive line is better than the Jets' offensive line, and it kind of all evens out.
If the right tackle doesn't come back, though, I think Darrell Williams, who got hurt during camp already, though, the lines might be comparable.
Yeah, true. All right, let's talk a little bit. I want to do the Browns. We're going to get to the Bengals soon in a couple of minutes, but I just want to wrap up the Browns. Jarvis Landry currently going 23rd. That's standard, sorry. I got to get to PPR because it's where his value lies. It'll be much higher on this one. PPR right now, Jarvis Landry, 23. It's insane to me. I just catches the ball 100 times every year, and I know it's a new team and it's new, but I do think he and Tyrod Taylor have a really good connection. So I have no problem with Jarvis Landry being my number two, currently being drafted behind Juju Smith-Schuster and Josh Gordon. In PPR leagues, my strategy is I will take off some of the upside as long with certain picks, as long as the guys have the ball in their hands a lot. I'm trying to get to as close to 300 catches as I can with my top three wide receivers. In PPR. That's just where I'm at. So I like guys like Golden Tate, like Jarvis Landry. I need to have one of those guys, Adam Thielen, that are going to catch the ball 90-plus times. I'm just trying to get there through hell or high water. That's what I'm trying to do because I don't want – it's why I eschew sometimes guys like Marvin Jones that are big playmakers. It may be hypocritical because I like Juju Smith-Schuster, but – I would probably take Landry over Smith-Schuster, for example. I want the guy that's going to touch the ball more. Do you know what I mean? Because those big plays can have more variance, whereas I know Jarvis Landry is going to catch the ball 100 times in an offense every year, even though he's moving here and yada, yada.
So here's
receivers that move teams. There's some stats that suggest it's difficult to maintain that consistency when you're moving teams.
So last year, the Miami Dolphins threw the ball 602 times. Jarvis Landry had 160 targets. The Cleveland Browns as a team last year threw the ball 574 times. That's already a little bit of a drop.
So it's close.
The most.
It's close, though.
Sure. And the most passes Tyrod Taylor has ever thrown in a single season is 436. So let's say they meet somewhere in the middle, and it's 500
attempts.
He throws
the ball 500 times.
Sure.
Yeah.
That is still, though, 100 less than the Miami Dolphins team that he was a part of. And now he's playing with, I would argue, better talent around him. So 160 targets, what's that number look like, Mike?
Oh, that number, I don't think he's going to get to the 100 catches again, to be fair. I don't think he's going to get there again. But I'll give you a sense of last year. Let's just say he gets to 85 catches. Knock that number down, right? I'll take 15% off of his number from last year, even more, because he caught 112 passes. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. 11 guys caught over 85 passes last year. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. No, sorry, 9. So that's top 10 in receptions. I'll take that to the bank. I know he's going to be top 10 in receptions, even with all these changes. That's where I'm at with it. Now, somebody might say, well, yeah, but then it's going to be ball control stuff, and is he really going to score the 9 touchdowns again because he struggled with that in the past? I'm just telling you, like, if he's my wide receiver too, I'm good. I'm going to have a good floor every single week. And if his touchdowns go down to 6 and, you know, the 112 catches for 987 yards is pretty amazing. Like, I do think he could catch less passes for more yards. That offense got terribly inefficient at times last year. Jay Cutler was playing for them. He's retired. And he was bad. So, anyway, that's me on Landry.
Yeah, I think that it is a little bit difficult to gauge what he does then in terms of yards per catch as well, because that's going to matter. If it goes to 85 catches, and if the yards per catch goes up to 10, I mean, it's still only 850 yards. And if you get touchdown regression as well, the 6 touchdowns, 85 catches, 850 yards, and 6 touchdowns. Is that a wide receiver too? I don't know. I don't have that exactly in front of me.
What did you say, 85 catches? What were the other numbers?
If you go 85 catches, 850 yards, and 6 touchdowns. So that's 85 plus 85 plus 36, I think. 170, that's 206 points in PPR.
Yeah, 85 plus 85, 170 plus...
6 by 6 is 36.
So 4 point, you want to do...
Isn't it only 6 a touchdown?
Six touchdowns, 36. Some leagues are 4, some leagues are 6. It depends. Let's just do the math here. 216 fantasy points. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15 guys beat that last year. So there you go.
Wasn't it 206?
Mid-range wide receiver 2.
Isn't it 206?
206. Okay, so bump him down 2 then. So
that's not bad. No, but that's great then. Then that works out for you because
actually,
that
bump him down 1.
That might
wide
be
receiver 17.
That might be the low end for Jarvis. 85, 850, yeah. And 6. So that's great, and that's why you have to kind of work through those projections because just because things change, it doesn't mean that he can't still be incredibly productive. And I'm not going to rule out, as you mentioned, a guy that catches 100 passes every single year, and now just assume that it's going to be a significant drop-off, right? I mean, 112 last year, 94 in 2016, and 110 in 2015. As much as Odell Beckham, and deservedly so, gets that hype, nobody's ever caught more passes in the first 4 seasons of their career than Jarvis Landry. 400 receptions.
400 on the nose. That's right. That's right. To wrap it up, because we're coming to a break here, I don't want anything to do with Corey Coleman as the 80th wide receiver. I'm just not into it. David David Njoku as the 13th tight end. He's right behind Jack Doyle and George Kittle. I think I've made it clear that I'd prefer those guys. He's right in front of Tyler Eifert, no thank you, and O.J. Howard, no thank you. Austin Seferian Jenkins, Mike Gesicki behind him. News that Mike Gesicki is becoming a favorite of Ryan Tannehill, I think, is camp hype, but somebody to consider as a rookie. So I'm not particular. He's a super impressive athlete. I'm not on the David Njoku bandwagon. Like, even at maybe at some value.
I do think Tyrod has a history with tight ends. Keep that in mind.
That is true. That's why people like him. So it's something to consider. But those other guys I favor a little bit more. So we'll come back. We'll do Bengals to close it out after this on FST. Join us on Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Have you ever wanted to have a fantasy expert in the palm of your hand? Or better yet, in the pocket of your khakis? Well, check it out. Now you can. It's the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. Download it now to your phone. We promise no weird viruses, no strange tracking things, just 24 hours a day, 7 days a week of pure fantasy knowledge dropping all over your head. It's the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. Stop being a weirdo and streaming it online. Get it on your phone. Take it with you everywhere you go.
You don't get Chumbawamba every day. Straight 90s. I remember I was living in Boston, Kevin. Story time. I was living in Boston, and it's a really corny, cheesy song, obviously. But when it came on, like, we would go to this one place. I think it was called the Big Easy. It was like a sort of a bar club kind of place in Boston. And they would just play music to get people riled up. And that when that song would come on, people would go crazy. They would go, like, lose their minds. Like, they were so pumped when that song came on. And it's a really ridiculous song. But anyway, I do remember that. Sort of a vivid memory of mine. So there you go. Any questions about Chumbawamba or no?
No. 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 No questions.
Okay. All right, so we'll move on. Sorry to disappoint.
I just got nothing for you.
What's that? You got nothing for me?
No.
All right. So the Bengals, I'm going to put it in your lap. Let's talk about Andy Dalton. What do you got for me?
He's not great at quarterback. Hot take.
Really?
I said it. People are scared to say it these days.
So
that's
Yeah, they are. Is he really going out on a limb there?
You know, I think
he's currently 28th of QB ADPs. So some would say he is a depth quarterback in two QB and super flex leagues.
I find the Bengals to be fascinating. I said at the top of the show, I think all of these teams are fascinating. Steelers are Super Bowl contenders. Ravens have Lamar Jackson. The Browns have Baker Mayfield. They're obviously, people are going to be interested in all three of those teams. The Bengals, people might not feel that way. But they're kind of just being tossed around where it's like, all right, we have to pick the Browns to be better. Let's pencil the Bengals in for fourth. They've decided to bring Marvin Lewis back when nobody thought they did. One of the things that jumped out to me, and, you know, everybody can take these things with grains of salt, but something that we've referenced a lot throughout these previews was the Pro Football Focus of roster ranks. The Bengals were actually the second best in this division. They actually came as high as 18th, which is higher than I think a lot of people would expect this team. You know, Andy Dalton, I joke he's not great, but I also can make the argument he's the second-best quarterback in this division. They do have talented running backs. If Tyler Eifert ever played, that would be wonderful. A.J. Green is still fantastic. And there is talent throughout this defense. So as easy as it is to say, okay, the Browns are going to be better, Dalton's bad, let's put them to fourth, let's get the Browns up there. And I understand why that's the logic for some people. I do think that this Bengals team is worth going through and giving consideration.
Yeah. And, you know, if I asked you, because people just It is a team that's starting to get dismissed now. I think people just think that Marvin Lewis should have been moved out. By the way, they have a new defensive coordinator, Terrell Austin, who was in Detroit the last several seasons, been interviewed, a bunch of head coaching openings. Where do you think A.J. Green finished last year of all wide receivers?
10th.
That's right. Right on the money. 10th in PPR leagues. He caught 75 passes, 1,078 yards, 8 touchdowns on the 145 targets. Kind of a rough last month. So I think if you're an owner of his, you were probably frustrated by the way things went. But the reality is he's one of the top five receivers in the NFL. He just is. He's that good. It's him, Antonio Brown, Julio Jones, Odell Beckham. That's probably the top four. Who else would you throw in there now? I probably forgot somebody as I'm shouting.
You said Hopkins?
I didn't. So he's the one. He probably is elevated to the top tier now. Those are the five guys. Keenan Allen, Larry Fitzgerald, Michael Thomas. Michael Thomas probably making a push this year to get into that upper tier, but other guys too. You know, that's, I'm not cutting it off, but I think those are the top five, right? He's in it. And I'll never, if anybody ever wants to put Larry Fitzgerald up in the top tier, I'm fine with it too. I think he's one of the greatest receivers that's ever lived. So, as you said last year, they really struggled. Dead last in the league in yards, 30th in first downs, 29th in rushing attempts, 31st in yards, 29th in yards per attempt. Their offensive line, I said this a year ago, was abysmal. And I knew it was going to hold back. It's, you know, I don't pat myself on the back, but I did think that the Bengals, the Giants, and the Seahawks were all really going to struggle with offensive line play last year, and they did. Now, the Bengals have addressed it. They traded for Cordy Glenn in the offseason. They drafted Billy Price, who currently is slotted in as the starting center. They still have Jake Fisher there and Clint Bowling there. Bowling struggled at times, but Cedric Ogbuehe, who was a starting tackle for them last year, is currently a depth offensive line, which is probably where he needs to be. So it spells good news for Gio Bernard and Joe Mixon. Gio Bernard finished over Joe Mixon last year. So as long as he has a role in that pass game, he's an excellent NFL running back. I know he suffered an injury in the past, but last year he was good. And I think he and Joe Mixon will be a nice little 1-2 punch in their running game. But they're coming up from one of the worst rushing attacks in the league. Not the worst. The Lions were the worst, but one of the worst rushing attacks in the league. So a big improvement would have them would be still in the bottom 10.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's one of the rushing things that it sounds weird, but I actually find it to be sometimes it can be encouraging where a big jump doesn't mean that I'm projecting them to be all-stars. It's just, you know, you're moving them up, and that's what you should get from this Bengals team. They should be, you know, it's just they are one of the teams that every time I come across them, I almost kind of push them to the side because I think they're very, very difficult, because I understand why people have pushed them to the bottom of this division. But I also think you can make a case for them to come second in this division. I mean, what is your reaction if I told you Andy Dalton's the second best quarterback in this division?
You can make an argument. It's not strong. I think if he doesn't play well this year, he's not the quarterback anymore.
I agree.
So, but it's just tenuous position.
I agree that this is probably his last season to be a starting quarterback in this league. You know, that 2015.
He does it. He's 30, by the way.
Yeah. He's an old boy.
He's not like 26 anymore.
I mean, that 2015 season, he was on. He had MVP chatter, and it was understandable. And then he got hurt, and it kind of derailed everything for them. And, you know, he had an all right 2016. It wasn't great. I mean, he threw 4,200 yards. It was 18 touchdowns and 8 picks.
Hey, 18, it was pretty good. He made the Pro Bowl, but
I made the Pro Bowl that year. Last year's numbers, though, were simply abysmal. He couldn't complete 60% of his passes.
60% completion percentage. Yeah.
It was horrible. So
3,300 yards. He did throw for 25 touchdowns, but the yardage total was so bad that, look, they just didn't move the ball consistently last year. So I'll ask you this. Do you think Dalton does play well enough to be their starting quarterback in 2019?
Oh, no.
So you
like, are they going to keep Marvin Lewis? Like, well, why'd they give him a two-year extension?
He got a two-year deal.
What's happening?
They gave him a two-year deal. Well, they want him to be around the organization forever. So they could conceivably just keep him around for this season as a coach and then say, you know what, in the last year of the deal, we're going to move him upstairs. I don't think they'll do that. I think they will keep him around. To give you a sense of what caps is, so basically they can cut Dalton after this year and they'll be fine. They won't lose money. If they cut him pre-June 1 next year, they save $16 million just for next year alone. So he's technically signed through 2021, but this is it. This is the make or break for Dalton. As far as AJ Green is concerned, we talked about him. He's going, I think I said he's going 10th. He finished 10th last year. Is that right? Did I get that right? Let me make sure I have that right on the ADP. Yeah, he's eighth behind Keenan Allen, Devontae Adams, in front of Mike Evans, Tariq Hill. I'll definitely take him over the guys behind him, but I think I'm going to lean towards Allen and Adams. I think he's appropriately ranked there. Would you rather have AJ Green or Adam Thielen?
AJ Green.
Okay.
I think
you take the better player there.
I think one of the
I'm fine with that.
The Viking situation is strange to me. First year quarterback, first year offensive coordinator, getting the chemistry down. Well, we have to see how that plays out. I just think the fact that they've got the 11th and 14th ADP wide receiver, it's just I'm not positive that's how that turns out.
So here's a hill that I died on a couple of years ago. Tyler Boyd.
Oh geez.
They just released Brandon LaFell. Tyler Boyd's the 117th wide receiver off the board, which means he's currently not being drafted. But he's starting opposite A.J. Green. And John Ross is now in the mix as well.
What's the John Ross?
So let's see where John Ross is going.
That's a guy that you can get me interested in as you look up that ADP. There's upside.
He is the 78th. So, look, he caught exactly zero passes last year. So there's nowhere to go but up.
Okay, so already an improvement.
I thought he was a terrible draft pick by them. Let me go to their. I'll tell you exactly how they broke down last year from a catch standpoint, just to give you a sense of what the Bengals looked like. How targets and catches and all that kind of stuff. We'll see where John Ross could fall. So targets last year, AJ Green, 143. Brandon LaFell had 89 targets. Tyler Croft, 62. Gio Bernard, 60. He played every game too, Gio Bernard. So you got to figure it's around the same. Joe Mixon had a 34. Tyler Boyd, 32. And after that, nobody else worth noting from Tyler Eifert, he only had 5. So, you know, what does Tyler Eifert mean to this offense? Look, if he's in there, you just got to feed it, right? If Eifert's in there, you're not going to manage him anymore. The guy's hurt all the time. He's on his last injury, basically, Tyler Eifert. So why not just throw him the ball? Get him down in the red zone, eat up those targets. If he gets hurt, he gets hurt. He's probably going to have to retire if he gets hurt again.
Yeah,
I'm not saying that to be mean. I'm saying that, like, they're going to try to utilize his talent as long as they can. Like, how much can you manage him at this point? I'm not saying run him into the ground, but how much can you manage him? He's just hurt constantly.
Yeah, for sure. I think Eifert is incredibly difficult. I mean, what's the difference really between him and Jordan Reed? I mean, they're 80.
Different type of injury, but... Yeah, I know what you mean. I think it's a good comparison.
You know, I wanted just on the John Ross point. I mean, I agree. I didn't like that pick on draft day. It was very strange, that draft. Remember, Corey Davis went 5. I think Williams went 7th.
Mike Williams and then John Ross.
Yeah, yeah. It was just this weird.
In the top 10.
Yeah, the weird wide receiver run. So I guess if you know, that would be the justification for it. But I do think that if he's healthy, they will use him a decent bit, and they will do it in a number of ways. And I mean, look, college is college, and he played in the Pac-12. His last year in college, he caught 17 touchdowns. I think that if you sign me up for 14, if he plays 12 games, you're getting nice value on John Ross.
Yeah, I'm going to look, he's ranked so low. I'm going to be looking for other options probably around him. I don't want to tie too many things to this Bengals offense. You know what I mean? There's some offenses which you can, if you had two or three guys from the same team on the offense, the Saints or some others, even the Giants, or the Steelers, clearly.
Who goes higher, Corey Coleman or John Ross? Like, I'm asking, like, on their ADPs. And then I will ask who you would take.
And Ross is 78th, so they're right next to one another.
Perfect. See how that works out.
They're right behind. They're in the Chris Thompson, Dante Moncrief, Quincy Enunwa, John Ross, Traquan Smith from New Orleans, Corey Coleman, Albert Wilson from Miami. I mean, we are past, like, wide receiver 6. This is a wide receiver 7 discussion.
How many of those guys do you think you're taking John Ross behind, I guess?
Of that little group, I like Dante Moncrief. Anun was hurt now. Chris Thompson's listed here, so.
You like Moncrief, huh?
Jake Seeley talked me into Moncrief a little bit. Just, there's opportunity for upside. It's going to be a really low-volume passing offense, so that's why I'm not super excited about it. But I think he could be a really good complement to Marquise Lee, like a defined role. Mm. And I think he could beat out Keelan Cole, and DJ Chark is a rookie. So I think there's opportunity there. So that's it. We're done with the AFC North. I'm going to make you do rapid fire here. Steelers over 10.5, over under 10.5.
Over.
Me too. Bengals, they are 6.5, over or under?
Over.
Browns, 5.5, over or under?
Under.
I'm still under, too. Ravens, 8. We did this with the Ravens the other day. I think Scott Engel was right on the number at 8.
Here's the thing, as I dance around this question. Whether you feel like it should be Flacco or Lamar, it's going to start with Flacco, and all year long they're going to call for Lamar, and that stuff typically makes things difficult on a team. But they have what very easily could be a top 8 defense, although you mentioned age concerns. So, present day, I'll lean under.
I'll take them over. I'll give them the 9th win. I think 8 is right on it, though. I think it's an 8-8 team. But I'm making myself pick, so I'll take the Ravens over. I'll take the Bengals under and the Browns under. So that's it. That's all our divisional previews. We'll come back Saturday. We'll talk about whatever the heck we want. I'm gonna give kudos to one guy, not just Sean Engel and Kevin Walsh, but to LeBron James. Thank you for starting that school. Thank you for providing a good example. I don't care what anybody else says about you. Take care, everybody. Thanks for listening.